There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen, and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
And welcome to hour two of Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show, Super Bowl Sunday edition. And we got a great show for you lined up here for the second hour. For those of you sci-fi fans that are avid watchers of the TV show Ghost Hunters, last week on Wednesday they had the brand new UFO Hunters pilot popped out on the air, and they're going to be rerunning that this week. Sorry, driving Tim crazy. I'm dropping stuff over here.
What the?
I know, like a big child. They had the Ghost Hunters, or I'm sorry, UFO Hunters made their premiere. They're going to be back again. They're going to do a rerun of that episode, or what's the proper term they call that, Tim? Not a rerun, but a encore presentation.
Very nice.
Sounds a lot more fancy that way, I guess. So they're going to do an encore presentation. It was a great show, a lot of fun to watch, and being a fan of the paranormal, of course, as we are, and dealing in all facets of the paranormal, I definitely wanted to talk to these guys, and we were lucky enough to be able to get them on the air with us tonight, so... Let's cut to the chase. I do want to mention real quickly for everybody that is listening, though, if you go to darknessevents.com, we do have the new Stanley and new Queen Mary events are up with Jason and Grant from Ghost Hunters, Chris and Patrick from Dead Famous and Haunting Evidence. Tim and I will be out there, and we've got mostly a whole new lineup of speakers, everybody from Jeff Ballinger, Bobby Sullivan. Just a great little lineup going on, Richard Felix. So make sure to check it out again at darknessevents.com. But right now we're going to talk about UFO Hunters, and again, the encore presentation will be again this coming Wednesday, so check it out. And on the phone with us this evening, we have joining us from NiSpy, Ted Davis and Oliver, and I hope I don't butcher this, Kaminsky, is that right?
Oh, you got it right.
All right, good deal, we got it. Guys, thanks a lot for joining us here.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you know, I mean, they film the show a lot in the same vein as Ghost Hunters. Do you guys have like an actual little headquarters that you work out of that you take these calls on a regular basis? And how often do you guys actually get calls dealing with UFOs and abduction scenarios?
Well, we actually do have a small office that we work out of. We've been working for many years with Bud Hopkins Intruders Foundation, and he's well known in the field of UFOs and abductions, and I'm sure you've heard of him as well.
Oh, yeah.
And Ted and I have both been working with Bud for over 10 years in the field of UFO abduction research and UFOs as well. So we get calls and emails from all over the world, from people of all race, religion, creed, socioeconomic standing. What, don't you think so, Ted?
Yeah, they come in really pretty much around the clock.
And you guys are, you're based out of New York. Do you guys do a lot of investigations outside of the New York and East Coast area?
Well, at the moment, NiSpy is a new group. With the Hopkins group, we talk to people from all over the world, and we still do with NiSpy. It's actually a brand new organization, and it depends on funding. You know, if we have enough funding where we can go out and do some type of investigation elsewhere, then we do it. But local cases are the easiest for us to touch base on.
Right, and sometimes we have the ability to piggyback an investigation on an already existing vacation.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's always good to watch the news, and when you see a hotbed of UFO activity, that's where you're going to take the wives this year for the holidays, right?
It goes over
really well. Honey, how does Guatemala sound? Chile seems to have some flying Dutchmen in the sky. We want to go check that out.
It's actually funny that you mentioned that. The two cases that we did do on our show were cases that were done in the coldest days of the year that you can imagine. It was unbelievably frigid.
Yeah. Now, have you guys, let me talk, Ted, what sparked your interest in this field of the paranormal about UFOs? Did you actually have a sighting, or are you one of those that you're just driven so that you can have your own experience with something?
It's kind of the latter. There's no real lightning rod experience in my life that I can speak to. It was just always an interest, as long as I can remember, in science fiction, in UFOs, in space, the belief that there's got to be something else out there, and just being really open to that fact and expanding on that as I grew up.
How about you, Oliver?
Well, my father was a big he was an engineer and an inventor by profession, and he had a huge interest in astronomy and UFOs, and there were always UFO books laying around, and I did a lot of reading and gained my interest that way. And my father taught me, and my mother taught me, to be very open-minded about it, but to look at it from a, you know, scientific perspective.
Now, did you ever have an experience yourself, Oliver, or was it just through reading as well?
No, absolutely not. No experiences myself. I've never actually seen anything that I would say is outrageously unexplainable. So, no, it's just a drive, and Ted and I have talked to so many people over the years and investigated so many cases that, you know, we're clear that there's something going on.
Doesn't it get hard, though, when you're investigating? I mean, we mentioned and alluded to the ghost hunter guys. You know, at least on, you know, what they do, they run across strange anomalies that are able to kind of keep them driving and moving forward. If you've been involved in this field for quite a while and you haven't had personal experiences yourselves, does it get hard to keep the drive going and looking for your moment of truth?
I think our drive is really the people that contact us for help, because a lot of these people that have seen these objects or have claims of abductions, they need assistance, people just to talk to, people to believe them, that, you know, they're not, you know, making hoax stories, or they're not crazy. They need someone to investigate and to even just say, hey, you know, let me listen to you without laughing at you.
Sure. Well, that's an important part, I would guess, because, you know, the field seems to be opening up now with the paranormal, with all the different shows that have come out and everything going on. And, you know, what was so taboo a few years ago, everybody's talking about pretty freely now. Are you finding a lot more openness with people sharing their experiences with being abducted or seeing UFOs?
Well, that was one of the goals that we had when we wanted to get this show together. We wanted to make sure that it was filmed from a scientific perspective that backed up the evidence and showed the viewer the step-by-step process of an investigation, to show people that, hey, it's not just these people calling in that have these crazy stories. You know, we have a very rigid protocol that we have to follow to make sure that these cases are, you know, they hold water. And we don't go out and just investigate any case that comes in. I mean, these cases have to have, you know, multiple witnesses. There has to be, you know, hopefully some video. You know, there has to be some corroborating evidence to back up the claims, physical evidence.
Well, I was watching on episode one, Ted, you mentioned the fact that the first thing that kind of crosses your mind when you get these calls are these people mental? Is it, you know, just some kind of problem? And you have, now, Ted, you're the one with background in the psychological field. Is that right?
Right. I have a master's degree in psychology, and I have a master's degree in social work.
So when you...
It's a matter of a lot of different things you're trying to rule out. You want to rule out, do you think that there's a hoax going on here? It's obviously, when you have this kind of an email address or this kind of a phone line, you're prone to getting crank calls, so you want to rule that out. Is the person mentally ill? Did they just see something that was that's an honest mistake, like a meteor shower or something? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different things you want to try to rule out before you go to the fantastic.
Well, walk us through that, Ted. How do you begin to rule out the good from the bad? You know, I mean, to me, you know, I believe in the stuff. I've had a UFO experience. I've seen things. But when people start to tell me their story, my natural reaction is, sure. You know, we already have that in us. How do you guys define what is real and what is just somebody having a mistake or having a mental issue with it? You know, I mean, are there any high signs that you notice that pop up that, you know, this is probably a hoax. This is probably somebody that just seriously confused mentally, or boy, this sounds like it might be a legitimate deal.
Well, you want to talk to the person first and foremost. You want to listen. You want to write down the details and get as much out of them as you can. The more you talk to someone, the better you're going to get what kind of feel, you know, is going on with the case. If someone is hoaxing or has some kind of mental illness, the more you talk to them, you're going to get a better grasp on that situation. It's hard to really kind of break down quickly how to identify mental illness. I'm not qualified to diagnose people.
Oh, no, but I wondered, is there a specific thing that you find a lot of the callers that are pulling your chain seem to follow the same, you know, methodology, or somebody that if you figure out that they're probably just dealing more with mental issues, is it that when they're talking to you that the story changes constantly as they're discussing it with you, or is it, you know, they're so vehement about it, or they're hearing the voices right now from the alien probe? You know, I mean, that's what I'm looking for. I mean, is there any, like, definite high signs that, you know, we're dealing with somebody who's just not balanced here?
Right. Certainly, if we get an email from someone that's saying that they're in regular contact and they're being told to do X, Y, and Z, I mean, that's not something we're gonna jump right on. But if someone is giving us consistent details that we've heard in other cases, that's going to be a good sign. If their story holds up over time, we ask the same question again and again in different ways, and we're getting the same answer, no matter how hard we try to deviate them from the course, they're sticking to the story. Those are pretty good signs that there's something going on here.
Yeah, it's sort of the way a police detective would go about investigating a murder case. I mean, we have to be very careful to go back through every detail of a story that's told. And after a while, you get a pretty good feel for the red flags, you know, cases that you want to avoid, cases that look authentic, and those authentic cases are the cases that you usually want to go after. And, you know, you're always throwing out false leads to these people to see if they bite on them. And if they bite on them, then we know they're not telling the truth, you know.
Well, you know, that brings up a good point, though. If you're, you know, if you're talking to somebody and they claim that they're having regular contact, you know, we all have the initial feeling of, yeah, sure you do. How do we know that, you know, I mean, how do we know that they're not? Maybe that is their deal. Maybe, I mean, there's a guy, I don't know if you're familiar with him. His name is James Gilliland out of Washington, Trout Lake, Washington. Are either one of you familiar with him?
Not familiar with him, no.
No, I'm not.
He runs the Ysetti Ranch. He claims he has, you know, a UFO ranch. UFOs come to visit him all the time. They're sighted in his night sky all the time. He says on a clear night you have a 90 to 95% chance of seeing something. I showed up without any fanfare or letting him know that I was coming a year ago in October. Showed up on his front doorstep. I said, okay, show me. You know, we had him on the show a few times. Great guy. But, you know, again, you know, he looks like Grizzly Adams. He talks like a hippie, you know. He's, oh yeah, love, light, peace, oh, they're just here to share and they want us to know this and that. But I went out there and I saw some of the most insane things I've ever seen in my life in the night sky. I saw a lot of what I think were satellites, but I also saw some things moving that shouldn't have moved the way they did. I saw things reacting the way that, you know, I don't know satellites to react that way or planes to react that way. And I saw what I believe was a creature in the sky as well. So, I mean, there is legitimacy to some of these people that have regular claims to it as well. Do you go out to many of those where, you know, they claim that they've got constant contact and you go out and have seen or, you know, maybe not actually seen the UFOs, but seen physical evidence of something that may have been left behind?
Well, it's interesting. Ted, do you want to go first?
Well, I just wanted to clarify from my point earlier when I said mm-hmm. that when someone is claiming to have regular contact, I wasn't referring to seeing things regularly. It was more that they're getting messages beamed to them and things of that nature that are a little more wild. Certainly,
oh, sure.
There are a lot of people who have regular sightings, and there are hot spots, and there's a lot of strange things that go on pretty much around the clock.
Now, the rule of thumb for us is to remain objectively skeptical. We don't rule anything out ever. I mean, but what we do is we try to find the most consistent pattern of behavior and stories, and we follow that. I mean, that's why the best stories to go after are the stories where you have multiple witnesses, where you have video evidence, where you have people seeing things from different locations, and you try to triangulate and vector in on their stories to see if they all correspond. It really is like putting together the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle and see if they fit.
Are there any places right now, with all the UFO activity that seems to be taking place worldwide, is there a place you'd really like to get to sink your teeth into to either prove it or debunk it for yourselves?
We'd love to follow up on the Texas case. What do you think, Ted?
Yeah, that one is really, really sounds interesting. We'd love to get down there.
Well, tell us a little bit more about the Texas case. What's going on there?
The mass sighting seen by innumerable people of lights in the sky during the daytime, and it was actually photographed and videoed, and people actually said that they saw objects being chased by jet fighter planes and by military aircraft.
Oh, right. And then didn't the government come out and say, no, it was just airplanes, fighter planes that they were testing or something at the time?
Well, the initial government response was that there was nothing from the military. They had nothing in the area. And then they followed up, I don't know if it was several days later or a week later, and the Air Force came out and said, oh, well, we were doing some, what would you call that? They were running exercises in the area.
Mm.
And that's what people saw.
So those statements that are retracted are really always the interesting ones to go after, too.
Well, sure. It's almost like what happened at Roswell, that, you know, government officials came out and said, this is a UFO, and then all of a sudden, no, oh, well, I guess it's just a weather balloon.
Exactly.
And they had that retraction, which, you know, looks so strange. What did you guys think about the case that took place at O'Hare Field in Chicago? What was it, 2 years ago now?
Oh, yeah. That was an interesting one, too. It had multiple witnesses, multiple airport crew that have said that they saw something. You know, and then, again, it's a case that we'd like to look at. But the resources that we had back then, we didn't have the resources that we have now with sci-fi backing us up and
sure.
saying, hey, look, you guys go after these stories, you know, we'll film them with you.
How do you guys figure at this point, you know, O'Hare Field is a, you know, a major metropolitan airport, right? It's
yes.
it's
yeah.
after 9/11, the security has been upped at every major airport across the United States.
Right.
I gotta guess that they've got satellites tracking things that are flying in the sky over the airline, you know, over this. How is it that we're not seeing footage from security cameras or something of what was flying overhead at O'Hare? I mean, it hung there for quite a while. You know, pilots, you know, air technicians, stewardesses, the people up in the control tower saw this. What do you guys think of that? When, I mean, you know, that's a major sighting. It's not just Billy Bob and his Range Rover shooting ducks in the middle of the night and seeing something flying overhead. You know, this is a major hub of you know, airline. How can we have not caught some kind of footage of this thing?
Well, actually, it was reported that one of the pilots took pictures. He had a camera and he took pictures.
And that pilot has since vanished.
Well, we're far from conspiracy people, but
sure.
you know, certainly there were reports from a lot of different people, and we didn't actually investigate the case, so it's hard for us to talk about it. But you know, we read a lot of reports about people seeing things, an actual object that actually took off, and if I recall properly, it actually went up through the clouds and left an impression in the cloud where it had gone up.
Yeah,
right.
They said it punched a hole in the clouds.
So that's the type of stuff that we'd love to look into. And, you know, why isn't radar evidence available? Well, it could be a number of reasons. Maybe radar can't track that type of technology if it is some type of technology that is, you know, not of this Earth. And it's also possible that the objects have the capacity to become invisible, something that, you know, Bud Hopkins has written about extensively in his book, Sight Unseen. And, you know, there's a lot of aspects. The case that we did in the show that will be, you know, reshown next week is a case where the evidence, the FAA evidence, was actually suppressed, and then later on it came out that there was FAA radar evidence that came out to support the case.
Yeah, as much as Oliver says that we are not conspiracists, sometimes you have to kind of look at things simply and say, well, at the end of the day, who owns the radar evidence? Who owns the airspace over these airports? And, you know, who could control the information?
Why do you think it's so important right now? And I mean, this is just conjecture and, you know, your thoughts on it. But with all the sightings that are seen across the United States, across the world, you know, it's obvious these things aren't violent because they're not attacking us, right? They're you know, and multiple people are seeing them. They're being sighted from different cities, states, like you mentioned, economic statue, religious statue. Everybody is seeing these things going on. Why? What's in it for the government to keep denying that this is going on? You know, wouldn't it just make it not as popular to say, well, yeah, well, okay, there are things we track in the sky. We have no clue what the hell they are, you know, but they don't seem to be bothering us. So, you know, until we have further knowledge, we'll let you know.
Well, it's pure conjecture, but I think the last thing any government would want to admit is that they don't have the power to protect their people from a technology outside of their own or
right.
prevent it.
But most of the public now, I think you guys might find doing the show too, most of the public believes that there are UFOs and we've had some kind of contact in one way, shape, or another. So, I mean, we're already kind of aware of this. I mean, you know, aside from the, you know, anal probing fantasies of every goofball across the United States that thinks that, you know, that's all that the aliens are here is to check out the tenderness of our rectums, you know, you know, they're not really doing any damage. And they've proven now, too, I don't know if you guys saw the special that was done a couple years ago on El Chupacabra, but they were talking about cow mutilations.
Right.
And the UFO possibility connection. And one of the cops actually got tired of all these cow mutilations. He went out, they roped off a dead cow that they found, you know, that had just died of natural causes. They roped it off, kept it under surveillance for, I think it was 48 hours, and just watched to see what would happen to a natural cow and its elements. And within 48 hours, it looked like a classic, you know, cow mutilation, because the heat, the innards swole, they burst out of the stomach. There are bugs and birds and, you know, all these animals whose job it is to eat and clean these things up. And by the time they were done, you know, the blowflies take care of all the soft tissues, which are the lips, the anus, the, you know, the udders, all the soft tissue area that always seems to be removed from these. And, you know, we found a scientific explanation now for cow mutilation that seems to fit in with exact what people always think UFOs are doing. So we don't really have any proof that aliens are hurting us or doing any damage. That's why, I don't understand why there's so much hubbub about hiding this stuff.
Actually, I'd stand to differ with you, Ted. What do you think?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, we still are trying to piece this thing together after some 60 years of the field looking at UFO sightings and potential crashes and abductions. And I really still feel that the government stands up and says, we're here to protect you. We're here to take care of you. I mean, look how earth-shattering 9/11 was.
Right.
People couldn't handle that. Now imagine something with complete control that could, you know, take care of our entire military and render it helpless.
Right? I don't know if you guys have heard about that. We already have that problem. I think her name is Oprah. She's taking over. Guys, we got to take our first break here, so stick
with
us. I'm
hungry for a burger. I don't know about you guys.
After you're talking about a little anus and cow lips, Tim's hungry.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take our first break. We'll be back with you guys in a few minutes. And please stay tuned. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show.
We thought El Chupacabra meant the cup of coffee in Spanish.
Me llamo Eduardo Especial. ¿Cómo está el yay?
What you talking about, Willis?
Shows you what we know. Stay tuned. There's more to come from the darkness on the edge of town.
I know I didn't have an anal probe, and I know that I am not under alien control.
Now it's your turn.
Strange things happen in the darkness on the edge of town.
Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, Mr. Tim Dennis, and our guests this evening are from UFO Hunters on the Sci-Fi Channel. They'll be rerunning that show this upcoming Wednesday, so check it out. We have the team leaders, Ted Davis and Oliver Kaminsky, with us. So we're talking about UFOs and the possibilities of life on other planets, and are they messing with us here? Do you guys have philosophy? Why do you think aliens are here and they're not just landing on the front lawn of the, you know, the White House? And why aren't we having regular conversations with them in a public forum?
Well, I think if they are landing on the front lawn of the White House, they're not making themselves known that they are.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we can also look at our own history on this planet to answer that question. Our experience on this planet is every time a advanced culture has made contact with a less advanced culture, the more advanced seems to wipe out the other culture. So who knows? Maybe they have sort of a Star Trek prime directive that they're not supposed to openly influence us.
Actually, when you think about it, we actually send our probes out to different planets, and we're just there for experimental data collection. And in the same way that,
but we're out trying to figure out if there's life there. They've already found that out.
Sure, sure.
So, yeah, that's what I, you know, the whole field of the UFO, you know, community seems so strange to me, just in the sense that it's, you know, what do you think, if anything, is going to show definitive proof that there is? I mean, wasn't there a famous photograph that I think even made it on the cover of Life magazine where there were UFOs over, I think it was it the Washington Monument? And over the White House, I believe, and I think it was like 1953, or in the early 50s of these UFOs there. What's it going to take for us as a civilization to finally all come to terms with, okay, there are UFOs, you know, let's deal with this, you know, on a normal basis?
I think some people are never going to be satisfied. No evidence is ever going to be strong enough. But I think for many people, it's really as simple as what's happened in many other countries, the government and the military coming forward and admitting that there's something to this phenomenon.
Right. Our colleague recently, Leslie Keene, had, had spearheaded a conference in Washington, D.C. It was an actual press conference, and it was filmed by CNN and Reuters, and it actually brought forth a whole bunch of high-ranking military and military and what other type of people were there?
Government officials around the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And they all basically came forward and said, hey, this stuff is real, this stuff happened, it's been covered up.
And that's it? Yeah, I mean, wasn't it France that came forward, I think it was last year, wasn't it? And they said, well, you know, we're going to start making our stuff public knowledge, and that they admit that they do have quite a bit of extensive background on UFO contact and visualization?
Yes, that was big news when that hit.
Sure. France is actually starting to really open their files on that.
Very cool. Well, why don't you tell us about your team that you have? Tell us about the different players on your team and what do they do and how do they fit in for the show?
Well, Ted and I, we founded iSpy in about 2006. We have been working for Bud Hopkins Intruders Foundation on the advisory committee for about 10 years each, and we became friends there. And most of the people on the iSpy team are actually from Bud Hopkins' group. We have Jed Turnbull, who is our clinical hypnotherapist, and he's very knowledgeable on trauma therapy and working with people under hypnosis to regain their lost memories. We have a lot of people who claim that they may have had abductions, and he does and works with them to try to retrieve those lost memories. And
you know what's interesting? Maybe you guys can answer this on for me too. You mentioned earlier one of the things you look for is that if people seem to share the same stories from all over, that's one way to validate that they're having a most likely a UFO experience, right?
Correct.
Yes, you got to take many elements of the story together.
Well, that's what I was curious about. Is so many, you know, I liken it to when near death experiences. You know, we hear the voices, we see the shaft of, you know, we see the dark tunnel, we see the shaft of light at the end, and go to the light. And now science is explaining that that's the brain shutting down and what we're physically going through, and that's why we're interpreting it as going to the light and, you know, through the tunnels and blah, blah, blah. But it's a shared experience. And I don't know a walk of life that doesn't know about near-death experiences in one way, shape, or another, or have heard stories. Same with UFOs. Isn't it just if people, so many people have had or heard these stories, and we've all seen Close Encounters and E.T. and Star Trek and, you know, Battlestar Galactica, all these different paranormal or all these different sci-fi UFO type deals. Aren't most people's stories going to be pretty similar to, I mean, when we have people on the show here talking about the UFO, you know, stuff that they've seen, it all pretty much mirrors the exact same stories. How do you differentiate between that and just, you know, somebody just requoting something that somebody else has done and said?
Well, in terms of abductions, there are actually some trade secrets that investigators have kind of collectively held back over the years to use as a means of testing people. There's things that people report again and again, and they've never made it into print, and they've never been talked about openly, and that does help us. It's one tool.
Is it true that aliens are known to paint our toenails green?
I cannot comment either way on that. Sorry.
Well, it actually goes back to your comment originally that they haven't really done anything to hurt us, and that's where Ted and I will probably agree to disagree with you. We've worked for so many years with the Hopkins Group that we can tell you, without a shadow of doubt, these people that have had experiences that we feel that are legitimate, they've been traumatized. Every abductee.
Yeah, but maybe they had it coming.
Yeah, but we feel, like I said, and we want to help these people. These people need assistance, just like a person, who had 9/11 trauma needs assistance. It's more or less a very similar thing.
What do you offer to them? I mean, just counseling-wise, I know with Ted's background and all, but I mean, what all do you offer them for help? Is there support groups for people that have been abducted?
There are. As I mentioned, Jed Turnbull is our clinical hypnotherapist, and he's also a trauma specialist, and he helps these people deal with their experiences. And that's kind of a support that we provide on that end. Another member of our team that you had asked about before is Dennis Anderson, and he's the director of the Wagner College Planetarium in Staten Island. So he brings like an astronomical background to the group. And the fifth member of our team is Denise Petty, and she's actually a private investigator. So she brings private investigation experience to the group.
How long, when you guys come across someone who's had an alien abduction experience, how long do you kind of hold their hand and take them through therapy? And at what point do you release them to a trained professional or somebody else that can maybe continue the case further? Because I know from watching the show, you guys, you don't take anything out of pocket for this. You're putting out your own efforts for this. How long do you kind of handhold them until you have to turn them over to somebody?
It depends on the individual case. Some people are more resilient than others. Some people, it could take years. We do have a network of therapists around the country, even some around the world, that we've put together over our years with our contacts with various organizations to help people who were not able to get there or were not able to continue with them. But when you find that when you do this sort of work, especially with abductees, you kind of make a connection for life, and maybe you're not in that same range of contact you were initially with an investigation, you're always going to hear from them down the road.
Well, I was curious when you brought up Jed and you said that he does the hypnotherapy. The reason I kind of brought up the question about shared experiences is, you know, so many people, again, have heard the classic stories of this is what the alien looks like. And under hypnosis, they repeat the exact same thing that hundreds of people have claimed and thousands of people have claimed to see. Well, because we've all watched the same UFO shows and we all have watched the same, you know, sightings and in search ofs and things like that. And it's always the same story of how the abduction occurred and lost time. When Jed is doing a hypnotherapy session doing this, have you ever talked to him about how do you know that the... Because I'll tell you what, I've done the stage hypnosis shows where, you know, for the comedy effect, you go up on stage, they quote-unquote put you under, and then you act like a jackass for the next 25, 30 minutes. I wasn't out. I just let my inhibitions go and acted like an idiot for a half an hour to entertain the crowd.
Exactly.
How do you know, or how does Jed know, that he's not just getting the same vivid imagination that this person can now cut loose and kind of share the story that they've you know, convoluted or created for themselves?
Well, there's...
I mean, do you know what I'm following on with
that? Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's always a concern that a subject wants to please the hypnotist and do what the hypnotist wants to hear from him. And that's why we have to be very careful, and I don't speak because I don't do hypnosis, but Jed does, but there's a clear protocol that you have to follow to make sure that you do not lead a witness in a direction that, you know, you're filling in the blanks for him. He's got to do it himself.
Right, well, I understand that, but still, you know, right now you could, I've never been abducted by an alien that I'm aware of, but I could, you know, pretend to go under and tell you pretty much the same story I've heard repeated 1,000 times on every other TV show about what an alien abduction was like, and that, you know, I woke up and I was in my room and there was a bright white light pouring in from around the doorway, and standing in my room was a gray about 4 feet tall with these almond-shaped eyes and a slit for a mouth and little holes for noses, and you know, they seemed to talk telepathically to me, and you know, they gently touched me, and I couldn't move, and it was frightening. And then the next thing I know is, you know, I'm ass up in the air, and I've got a anal probe going on. You know, we've all heard those stories. I mean, that's where I would say, even if you're not leading me, enough of these people know these stories. I would say doesn't that make your job really hard, because so many people are familiar. This isn't like a closeted environment. You know, it's not like, you know, the big pink bunny fairy that nobody knows about yet, and yet people all around the world are talking about it, you know, quietly amongst themselves, and now it's going to start to break, and oh my God, this is happening there, it happened here too. UFO stories have been going around for centuries now, or well, yeah, I guess since the 40s here, but, you know, there's proof of it in cave paintings and Renaissance art, and, you know, even if you believe it, in the Bible there's mention of UFOs.
Well, there's a few things to discuss with that. First of all, as I mentioned earlier, there are the things that are held back that people don't know about, and they can't just go to the story from the media or from the book to let us know an answer to a certain question. The other part of it is that media contamination certainly is something we worry about and we have to deal with, but we have to look at the chicken or the egg. Where did this all come from to begin with? There was nothing in the science fiction realm that really had these sort of descriptions from years ago, and there's so many aspects of this that never matched up with science fiction. So where did this core of specific event histories come from? It just emerged spontaneously out of nowhere?
All right, fair enough. But once it's been perpetuated and it's been spread, you know, it's kind of like a computer virus. It takes on a life of its own, and people have that shared knowledge and stories, and there are so many people that want to feel a part of something. You know, Tim and I have learned, and you know, just dealing with the radio show, some people want to believe so bad that they'll look at anything and make it a paranormal experience. You know, we had a lady who sent me a photograph from a, what she called a quote-unquote ghost town that had been closed down since the 80s, and there was a ghost of this man standing in the doorway of the grocery store, and could I see it? It's very clear. And when I told her, well, yeah, it's a cardboard cutout of James Dean with a Diet Coke can in his hand from the old 80s, you know, advertisements, you know, her answer to me was, well, I can see why you'd think that, but, you know, that wasn't in the door when we took the photograph. I said, well, either way, then you're only being haunted by a cardboard cutout because it's still James Dean with a Coke can in his hand, you know?
As there's more information out there, publicly known, it gets harder and harder. We have to develop new ways to determine whether or not a person's telling the truth or not.
Another tool we have at our disposal is that we have a psychological test that I developed with Bud Hopkins over a period of many years, which is a true-false test that someone can sit down and take, and it doesn't ask direct questions like, have you been abducted, and you know, were they this and were they that. It kind of hits at it from different angles that have nothing to do with overt UFO and alien experiences, and it's something we've been putting together. And we have a statistical database on it, and we can compare people who have actually had these experiences to people who have not had these experiences to people who are faking or pretending to have these experiences, and we can score the test and see where the person falls.
Right, and that is all overseen by university-level psychologists.
Okay, so you've got that going on. Do you guys have you ever employed, or do you think you might be using it in the future on the TV show? Would you employ lie detectors?
It's something we could, but personally, I don't like lie detectors just from the simple reason that it implies that you're assuming that the person is being distruthful. Because if you think about it, you're looking for lies. It's a lie detector. That's what you're looking. That's what you're expecting to find. But I'm not against using it.
I'm not against using it either. But I agree with you, Ted.
Well, yeah, you're looking for that, but you guys mentioned at the beginning you're going into it with a scientific approach to try to debunk these sightings and find other things. I would say that might be an employable, you know, piece of technology that you can use that will at least start, you know, helping to cull the herd from, you know, the massive amounts of stories. Because, and again, I don't mean to keep bringing the ghost hunters up to you guys, but once their show aired, then everybody had a haunted house.
Right.
And, you know, let's see if we can fool the ghost hunters and they're building speakers in the walls and this, that, and the other. It's got to get to be a little bit more, it's going to get a lot harder, I would say, for you guys to have definitive stories because of this. How many episodes have you guys filmed so far?
We've just filmed the pilot.
You just did the pilot to start it off and get results from that? Good. And then we are rerunning that pilot on Sci-Fi this Wednesday, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. We're going to take our second break here. We'll be back. We'll have about 15 minutes left with you guys. Thanks a lot for tuning in. You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Make sure that you remember to set your TiVos or watch it next Wednesday. This coming Wednesday, you're going to be able to watch an encore presentation of UFO Hunters on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Adopting aliens and giving them good homes since 1953. Just don't tell our landlord.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
It's Dave and Tim, shacking up in the darkness on the edge of town. If it weren't for ghosts and aliens, these guys wouldn't be getting any action at all.
Yeah, baby!
I threw up in my mouth a little bit.
Welcome back to The Darkness on the Edge of Town with Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis.
And welcome Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio. I'd like to remind you that we do have two brand new trips up on our website. You can join us as we ghost hunt the Queen Mary and the Stanley Hotel in November and December 2008. Tickets are going to go fast. We've already started selling online for them. You can go to darknessevents.com. These are two of our most popular trips. They are going to go quickly. We are currently in the works right now to put together another Rolling Hills event, and you can join us for that. And you know when we're doing that, don't you, Tim?
Friday the 13th.
Yes. You can join us out on Friday the 13th in June, where you'll be able to come out and ghost hunt Rolling Hills Sanitarium with us. Chris Fleming, Patrick Burns will be your hosts on this paranormal journey. We're going to be adding more speakers as we go along. It's going to be a fantastic time, and we should have that information up in the next 7 days. We're also going to have, leading into our guests here, we're going to have with us an event in June. We're going to be going out to the Isetti Ranch in Trout Lake, Washington, where we're going to go skywatch and hopefully get to see some UFO activity. And we'll be doing that out at Isetti Ranch, Trout Lake, Washington. That'll be taking place in June as well. We'll get out more information for you on that very soon. And maybe we'll even be lucky enough to have Ted Davis and Oliver Kaminsky join us on that show as well when we go out to the live ghost hunt, UFO hunt. Would you guys have an interest in doing that?
Sure, sounds good to me.
Yeah, love to do it.
Yeah, because it's, I'll tell you, like I said, that was kind of a life-altering experience for me to go out there and see the things that I saw over the skies at this guy's property. Do you find that a lot of the stories that take place, you know, I know a lot of the rumors are that they seem to take place near military installations or they seem to take place over volcano areas that are rich with volcano activity. Any thoughts on that of why these, these UFOs and aliens would be hanging around those areas?
Not so sure about the volcanic areas, but certainly the military areas, you see a lot of sightings, strange craft, which could be military craft.
Do you think that it might be them just trying to check it out? And what do you make of, like, the film footage that they show that there's, you know, that famous UFO footage prior to 9/11 of a UFO being seen skirting around near the Twin Towers, the UFO that seemed to clear into Vatican City airspace right after the Pope had passed away when they, during Vatican City when they had all the people in the square waiting for the release of who the new Pope would be. You know, there was footage that popped up of UFO activity in that as well.
I'm not familiar with the one in Vatican City, but I believe the one of the UFO in and around the Twin Towers, wasn't that one identified as a hoax?
Well, there was one that supposedly was a hoax that where the UFO was like playing hide and seek around the towers, dipping in and out. But there was other witnesses that said around a week or so prior to it, they saw what appeared to be UFO hovering around the Twin Towers, and the video footage is not that really cool video footage that shows the UFO ducking back and forth between the two buildings like it's playing hide-and-seek and peeking in the girls' washroom. You know, this was actually looked like it was, the same grainy sky with the little silver dome kind of hanging out over the skies over the Twin Towers.
Mm-hmm. I recall seeing something like that. Would love to be able to look at it or investigate a case like that. But we have so many cases that come across our desk,
sure.
And I guess the issue is trying to pick out the best ones.
What's the best evidence that you've ever seen to lead you to believe that in UFO activity?
Well, with the case we just did and that we filmed for the Sci-Fi Channel is a fantastic case. It was the Carteret sightings, which occurred originally back in. It was July of 2001, and that was seen by many, many hundreds of people over from two different states. A large diamond-shaped object was hovering near the Newark Airport area, and it was witnessed by multiple people, which we interviewed and investigated. Dennis Anderson of our group was the original investigator on that case in 2001, and we decided to recently reinvestigate that case because we had a potential abductee related to that case who came forward after years of flashbacks and memories of the event.
How often do you find that it's years after a UFO sighting that somebody starts to have memories of it happening? And then do they always have missing time, or is it just that it seems like they forgot that they witnessed a UFO?
Well, it can happen that it's decades and decades later that someone recalls something that had happened. It could have been early childhood. It could have been as an adult. But it usually corresponds with some sort of close encounter with a mysterious object. And if we're talking about them forgetting for a long time, it generally does have to do with missing time.
Out of all the cases that you get, what would you say is a percentage of only craft, and how many percentage of people seeing craft and actual alien beings?
We ultimately find that every close range sighting ultimately has a very high percentage of potential abductees that have come forward eventually to our, you know, to us. Not always, but the percentage is very high. I would say close range is about 80%.
Right, and let me just clarify also that just because you saw a UFO that really was a great, you know, solid object, it was structured, it was there, there's no other explanation, and it was really close, doesn't mean they were there for you. You could have just been an innocent bystander, they could have been getting someone else. So we don't want to freak people out there thinking that, oh my God, I'm an abductee.
Don't worry, they weren't there for you. Just one of your friends or relatives is getting probed. That's okay.
It could have been someone in the house next door. It depends. Wherever you were.
That's okay. They got it coming too.
Yeah. Or it could have been multiple people as well. Right.
Do you get response from people when, you know, I mean, do you see high levels of other paranormal activity happening in hotbed sort, you know, spots of UFO activity? Do you see cryptids, you know, Bigfoot sightings or more ghost sightings and stories that seem to correlate around UFO areas?
There's a lot of crossover. We see a lot of crossover between the cases, and sometimes it would be interesting to, you know, I would love to do a joint project at some point with the ghost hunters on various phenomena. That would be cool.
We find that people that have had a lot of abduction experiences throughout life many times will explain them over the years as haunting phenomena, the strange things that happen in their house. People will see orbs of light that they might assume is a haunting phenomena, but it actually turns out that it's related to the UFO phenomena.
Okay. What about, like, I know the old hag syndrome, and psychologically, Ted, I think you were mentioning with, you know, the psychology of it, the old hag syndrome and the UFO syndrome. Now that could have more to do with dreaming, right? The what are they called? Hypnagogic and hypnopompic states.
Correct.
That are just in between and coming out of.
Right. Awake? You have the sleep paralysis, is what they're talking about, and that's kind of, it's interesting because when you talk to the experts on sleep paralysis and you ask them, well, how long does something like that last for? And what they'll say is, well, typically it's only seconds. It's not a long duration of time. And what they're also talking about, the old hag with something sitting on their chest, people, it's really about a sense that something's there. And they're afraid because they have this sense and they can't move. But it really has nothing to do with this entire event history that then emerges when we investigate the case.
Especially if the witness is wide awake and driving his car.
Right. We run into cases of abduction that happen all the time. People love to really focus on the bedroom cases, but people report abductions, right, when they're driving their car, when they're in a group of people, broad daylight, watching television, you name it, out in the field having a catch. So you really can't explain those away with sleep paralysis.
No, that's true. That's true. What do you guys, you know, if people are looking for help, and they've gone through what they believe was an abduction, or they've gone through sightings or multiple sightings, and they're looking for help, how can they reach out to you?
Well, they can reach us at www.nyspy.com, and that's ny-spy.com. Our active website has inquiry links on there, and they can send us some information there.
And we'll put that link up on our website as well. So if you're listening to the show right now or you're listening to it in an archive form, you can go to darknessradio.com, click on the show tab. We'll have the pictures of the guys up there for about a week. And all you have to do is click it, and it'll take you right to their direct website, and also a link that'll take you over to the sci-fi web boards. So that way you can talk about the show and see more information. And the show is going to be on what time frame is it again this Wednesday? Is it 9 p.m. Central? Or, I mean, 9 p.m. Eastern?
I believe it's going to be 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central, although that may change. So ask your listeners to please check their local listings.
Definitely will. What else do you want to tell people? You've got about 2 minutes left, 3 minutes left here. What would you like people to know that are going through this and feeling alone or frightened?
Well, that there are people out there that they can talk to that won't laugh at them. Our group is specifically one of them.
And just the act of just talking to someone about it who is a sympathetic ear, just that alone, people tell us, is really helpful and eases the burden on them.
All right, so just knowing that they're not alone in this and that there is help out there for them. Should they see, Ted, should they seek help from regular counselors? Do you think regular counselors are prepared for this type of situation and experience now? Are they more suited for it? Or do a lot of the counselors that you know or are familiar with, do they, you know, laugh it off and think it's more of a thing where people just need some medication or get a life?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's closer to what you ended there with, because most therapists and counselors aren't equipped to handle this. It's really a specialization, and they're going to look for other explanations. They're going to assume the person's hoaxing. They're going to assume the person is mentally ill, and it's not going to be a good experience. We've had cases where people have been in therapy for 20, 30 years, and they tell us that they never told their therapist about their abduction experiences because they didn't think they'd believe them.
And then they finally found an ear working with us.
I mean, can you imagine that, sitting in that on the couch an hour a week for years and years and years and never opening up that door because you're afraid to talk about it?
I mean, they don't. Some people won't even tell their closest family members what they're going through for fear that they would be ridiculed or thought to be crazy.
Yeah, that's a shame, and it's got to be just traumatic, you know, experience. I know once I had my experience in, you know, a year ago, I call it Richard Dreyfusitis. I walked around, I just wanted to share it with everybody. I was, you know, constantly watching the night skies, looking for something and hoping to see, you know, and have more of an experience again. So, you know, I can totally relate to that whole, you know, mentality of wishing that there was more people to talk to about this, because you do start to tell people. And, you know, the creature I saw in the sky in Washington, you know, it blows my mind. And when I acknowledge it and I explain it, I do say it looks like a bad 1980s music video special effect. I mean, that's just how campy and goofy it looked. But I don't know how you explain something like that. You know, and that did leave me feeling kind of weird and alone and in that part of the story. Granted, you know, we have a paranormal radio show, so I can talk about it a little bit more freely. And,
sure,
you know, people already think I'm nuts, so it's okay if they if they just add this log to the fire. But
you're not alone in that one either.
Yeah, exactly. See, you just heard the sirens are coming to get me now. Well, guys, I just want you to know we appreciate you spending time with us. We wish you much success, and we hope the show continues and gets picked up as a regular series.
Thanks so much for having us on.
No problem. And again, it's Ted Davis and Oliver Kaminsky. And they are with UFO Hunters. If you would like more information on these guys, and if you've had abduction problems or you're sighting UFOs and having issues, you can contact them by going to ny-spi.com for more information. I want to thank you all for tuning in. Remember, next week, tune in and listen. We've got a great story about demonic possession in our home. Not in our home, but in a home. Lisa Lindley will be our guest, talking about her two homes that she was dealing with what she believes to be demonic problems. So we'll be back with you again next week in a brand new show. Thank you all for tuning in. This is Dave and Tim from Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show.